Chapter 13. Returning Home.
How's that now?
Joe Duell asked.
What do you mean we can't go back to being soldiers?
He rode atop one of the pilfered horses from the garrison and was now embroiled in a conversation about what they would do once they got back to the Empire proper. You've seen too much, been too close to me. Witness the way I was living out there. I cannot have you mixing back in with the common soldiers like it never happened. Rashan replied. They were all riding close together and talking loudly enough for all to hear. Rashan had slowed their progress back to Cadrus, assuring everyone that the message about the goblin raiders had arrived. Rashan's change of heart after the massacre had quickly resolved itself into a determination to resume his place atop the pecking order of the Cadran sorceress hierarchy. This is no free pension to live out your days in luxury. But you are not going back to the frontline duty or digging latrines. I shall find places for you all once everything has fallen back into place.
You are assuming you will be welcomed back so easily? Surely High Sorcerer Gravis is not going to step aside and cede you the position.
Iridan chimed in. He rode right next to Rashan on one of the smaller horses, a white mare that had a gray streak down her chest.
Of course not. I do not plan on making it a choice, though. By all rights, I outrank him, even now. The position of High Sorcerer is still a lesser one than Warlock, and I never officially resigned. Traditionally, the role of High Sorcerer is assumed by a Warlock as well, but I may allow him to keep his title and role as second in command should he be cooperative during the transition.
Iridan looked visibly concerned.
Cooperative? High Sorcerer Gravis is not known to be one for compromise. Let alone ceding rule of the inner circle to someone who has not set foot in the Empire for a century. Suppose he's not cooperative. What then?
Do not worry. Leadership of the inner circle has always been a small part politics and a large part ethereal might. Despite not being current with the doings at court and the petty backstabbing amongst the Imperial Circle, I shall have no problem demonstrating that I am the rightful leader of the Empire's sorcerers and the knighthood. I suspect we will find far less resistance on that front, however.
Why is that? Brennus asked. I've been through both the Academy and the School of Arms, and if anything, the knighthood is more hidebound and traditional than even the sorcerers.
Flanking Rashan on the other side from Iridan, Brennus had been the counterpoint to Rashan's arguments since he began making hints to his post-return plans for the Empire.
They will not just step aside and allow you to take charge of the Order.
Well, I think they value tradition more than you even know. Those old war mules have always looked back on the better times, every generation of them. And let me tell you this much. Those better times nearly always coincided with the ascension of a warlock to lead the Empire in battle. There is no glory in parades remembering someone else's wars. Plunder, conquest, the expansion of the Empire and throwing down the broken corpses of old foes. Those make for the tales that the old men tell. Most warriors, when they reach the age where creaking bones and failing sight limit them to hearthsides or their beds, want nothing more than to relive the glory of their youth and see wonder and admiration in the eyes of their young kinfolk. Pity the ones who have no tales to tell, or who cannot lie. No, the old guard will put up enough of a resistance to show that they care. And they will make sure I have convinced them thoroughly that my claim is authentic, which I have no worry of accomplishing. Then they will salute and step aside. Brennus noted that Rashan now sounded confident. His demeanor had changed markedly. He was no longer quiet and unassuming, content to let Brennus lead them and keep out of sight, back with Iridan. Now, when he asked questions, he sought only information, or to make one think of something in a new way. He no longer asked permission or even hinted that it might be necessary. He seemed to just have naturally taken over command. If his claims were all true, it seemed he was even within his rights to do so.
What if they charge you with abandoning your responsibility to the Empire? Brennus asked.
A Cadran officer could never get away with a long, unexplained absence without charges being brought. What will you tell them of the time you spent outside the Empire's borders with no word?
Perhaps they shall try that, though I think the circumstances are certainly unusual enough, and the justification legitimate enough, that I will weather the questioning well enough, Rashan said, somewhat more quietly.
Iffin, you do not mind me asking, just what was the circumstances?
A soldier named Tulak asked from the back of the group. Do you know the history of the Necromancer Wars? Rashan asked. There was general muttering at the question. I do, Brannis said. Iridan nodded. What of the Battle of Farron's Plain? Rashan continued. No, I cannot say that I know that one, Brannis responded. He had been a good student and had an excellent memory, especially battles. The Kadrin Empire had a rich history of wars, and Brannis knew them all quite well. He looked skeptically at Rashan, possibly having caught hold of a thread that could unravel his story. Well then, what do you know of the last great battle of the Third Necromancer War? Well, that would be the Battle of the Dead Earth. That is when Rorlock Rashan, or you, I suppose, unleashed a magic of unfathomable power that consumed both armies. There were no survivors, and the land itself was cracked and broken, with every plant, animal, and man not just dead, but reduced to skeletal remains. Nothing grew there for winters. Brannis recounted the story as best as he remembered it, being taught to him as a boy. So they ended up calling it the Battle of the Dead Earth, did they? Rashan mused. Would you like to hear the rest of the tale? Rashan didn't wait for a reply. It had begun to rain as the final blows rang out from the forge. It was an open-air smithy that adjoined the royal stables. The work had taken much longer than I had expected. I am no blacksmith, nor was I then, but I felt it was something I had to do myself. My handiwork was good enough to pass the muster of many a smith in the empire, though candidly I must admit I used ether to guide my hammer. And I did not just guide the blows of the hammer to shape the metal of the blade, but I forged ether right into the alloy, and not without structure either. The blade had a purpose, and just as that purpose was finished being crafted into it, one of my apprentices, a promising young man named Sarthon, spoke up.
Your work does not pass unnoticed, he told me.
I always valued thinkers who spoke their mind over the obsequious bootlicks the others in the inner circle seemed to prefer, so I asked him what he meant by that.
The heavens themselves cry at what you have wrought here, he said, gesturing up to the rain-soaked sky.
I had paid little attention to the weather, but it was indeed a foul day he was attributing to my handiwork. I took no offense, for indeed I had created something terrible. It seemed Sarthon was a bit of a poet, and I liked the image he had conjured in my mind. Well then, I replied, I shall call the sword Heaven's Cry. It seemed somehow appropriate. The task I had set out for was an unpleasant one, and I was equal to it. I had spent winters fighting back the legions of dead that Lorimar and his underlings kept creating and expanding. Several of the Empire's protectorates had been freed from our reign in the aftermath of the previous wars, and this time, Lorimar seemed intent at striking at the heart of the Empire. He had been bypassing the larger cities in favor of sacking villages and moving quickly, carving a path that one could see led straight to Cadrus. Here was our dilemma, though. You probably recall their name, Brannis, as might you, Iridan. But for the rest of you, should you not remember your history, my men were called the Red Riders. I stole them from the Imperial Academy and trained them as knights. Their magical training I diverted toward a single purpose, maintaining their hold on their own source. You see, such was the evil of the necromancers that even approaching them was fatal. They drew ether not just from the world around them, but straight from living sources. They could, and did, kill men outright just by draining them dry inside. A man killed like that was easier for them to reanimate, and sounder of body, than one who had been rent apart by blades or magic. Armies of foot soldiers would march into battle under one banner and end up fighting for their enemy. My Red Riders could wade into the middle of the fray, hacking down the dead. Our steeds were fashioned from nothing but ether, constructs I had made myself that were difficult and time-consuming to unravel, and sturdy enough to bear the rigors of battle. We brought nothing and no one with us that could be turned against us. I stole half a generation of sorcerers from Kadrin, but it was needed.
I had known that blades alone would not be enough. They were too many and we were too few. My own power I used mostly to defend us from the other tricks the necromancers knew, though even at that I had to be wary of all the dead ether that followed the walking corpses everywhere they went. That was why I created Heaven's Cry, to destroy an army. The fateful day we met Lorimar's army in Farron's Plain, we faced the entire might of the great necromancer and all his apprentices. It was his final march toward Cadrus itself, and he was preparing to do battle with all the forces we could muster. I had left scouts a day's ride behind us, so that if we failed to stop them, word would reach Cadrus for everyone to evacuate before the battle for the city. All who lived there were weapons waiting to be wielded against the inner circle, should the dead army get that far. Farron's Plain was farmland in those days. The wheat fields were knee-high, not quite tall enough for a good ambush, had our 100 or so had any need for stealth. Stealth was not an option for what I intended. Each time we had fought Lorimar, we would attack and withdraw. We would break his dead soldiers and ruin them so they could hold ether no longer, then ride off without letting him have any more corpses to replace them. It was wearying work, but we had been able to eventually wear down his armies and win 2 wars. But in the 3rd war, Lorimar had done better. He kept his armies far from the territories the Red Riders kept safe and amassed a huge force, one that our strike and flee tactics could not combat quickly enough to protect the heart of the Empire. That day at Farron's Plain, we charged into the vast legion with no thought of escape. The necromancers had grown used to our attacks and withered them, rather than putting serious effort to destroying us. I had thwarted them each time they had tried, and they had grown weary of wasting ether against my defenses. But that day, they saw blasts of ether and pieces of the dead flung like leaves on the wind. They realized I was no longer on the defensive, providing cover for the riders. No, I was carving a swath straight for them, safe at the center of a sea of dead bodyguards. They panicked, and they attacked. My riders had been trained to protect their source, but I had done better. My men could be overwhelmed by the sheer force of the necromancer's combined powers, but my source I had turned into a fortress. You see, I had already by this point gone beyond my mortal limits. The quest to find a way to defeat Lorimar had led me to the perfection of my defenses against him. Unfazed by their impotent assaults directly on my source, they tried conventional magics on me, but those were pitiful, atrophied powers, forgotten lessons that could not be relearned in the midst of battle. I cut my way to the heart of their army, within sight of Lorimar, the only one who posed a threat to me personally. As my men died around me by the dozens, I unleashed the power I had crafted into Heaven's Cry. I drove the blade into the earth at my feet with all my might, nearly to the hilt, and I drew all the ether I could. I drew from anything and everything I could grasp hold of, and I fed it into the sword. The ground cracked and split beneath my feet in an ever-widening area. From the cracks, a caustic fog arose and clawed at the flesh of the living and the dead alike. Nothing could bear its touch for long. Lorimar withstood it best, but even then, it seemed unsatisfying how quickly he succumbed to its power. But I became the center of a maelstrom. I had made sure the sword could finish its task. Whether I survived the day or not, I wanted to ensure that none of the necromancers made it out of that field alive. The sword continued to draw all the ether in the area. The field of wheat, Red Riders, Lorimar, his apprentices, and the animate dead. All were drained to the last wisp of ether as the sinister fog grew and spread. Cloth and leather, skin and sinew, the fog devoured it all, save my own flesh. I was its creator, and in its crafting, I was able to ensure at least that one small self-protection. My source was safe from it as well, though I could not teach it to let that be. I was immortal already, a demon as you would call me, and my source had no weaknesses through which ether might be pulled. Minutes passed, and I stared at nothing but the ground where the blade had entered. When I looked up, there was almost nothing left. where I had moments earlier ridden into battle beside 100 men and faced an army of uncountable thousands, there was nothing left that moved. The fog dissipated soon after the last of the ether had been burned off, and I could see to the horizon in all directions, and there was little left but cracked earth, fallen weapons, and a few bits of camp debris to tell there had been living men there at all. Bits of skeletons lay here and there, not fully consumed before the fog had gone, enough to hint at the vast scope of the carnage. I felt dizzy and sick. My life was war and carnage, and such a clean battlefield was nothing to my sensibilities, having seen the guts of friend and foe alike spilled an arm's length from me more times than I cared to count. No, it was being a conduit for all that ether, and not just ether, but dead ether. Imagine if you had gorged yourself at a feast, only to find that half the food was rotten with maggots. I felt infested, unclean. It was a nearly indescribable sensation. I stumbled away from the battlefield, confused. I am not one who is used to uncertainty, but I did not know how to cleanse myself of the ether that had gotten into me, that had merged with my own source. I did not want to bring that back to Cadrus with me, nor to anyone I wished to remain safe. So I set off alone to find seclusion and hoped that I could cleanse myself of the taint I had acquired. The rest is a tale longer than the trip we have remaining before us. Perhaps I shall tell bits of it, but understand that I left the Empire after ending its greatest threat in centuries, and then stayed away for its own good. If I stayed longer than perhaps necessity dictated, I would say that I earned it. And with that, Rashaan left them to consider his tale, and the missing bits of history that he had just revealed. Brannis knew well that the historical account said no one had lived through the Battle of the Dead Earth. The rest of the day passed more quietly. After finishing his tale, Rashaan became somewhat subdued, as if he had perhaps given them a bit too much insight into his past. When Brannis, Iridan, and all the rest had eagerly tried to find out what had happened thereafter, Rashaan told him that they would have to wait for another time, when he was feeling loquacious. The open farmland they had been passing through gave way to a small town called Pevet. It sprawled on either side of the Thadagar River, a few hundred houses, mostly with thatched roofs, a marketplace, and some mills. More importantly to Cadrin, it was a shipping port for transferring goods up and down the Thadagar, as well as dispersing the riverboat's cargoes to the smaller surrounding villages. Most importantly, within its borders was the Westway Bridge, one of the main crossings of the slow, deep Thadagar River, and where Brannis and his remaining command were intending to cross. The town was surrounded by a wall of rough-cut stone and mortar, with sentry towers at infrequent intervals. Pevet was far enough from the borderlands that the wall defined the town more than it defended it. It was kept in good repair, as Pevet was a prosperous town and the local lord who ruled it, Lord Fenrigar Whitestag, was a responsible, prudent man. Pevet was a hub of commerce, and Fenrigar believed that if war ever came, it would be a valuable target for disrupting the western half of the Empire proper. Brannis took the lead as they approached the gates. Heavily armed though they were, they bore imperial garb and insignia, the golden fist upon a red triangular background. Brannis did not expect difficulty. The gate stood wide, and there was no move to bar or defend it as they drew near. "Hail, gatekeeper!" Brannis called out. Gatekeeper was perhaps overly formal, given that the lone man preventing their entry was a bored-looking young man from the local militia, wearing Lord Fenrigar's green and black livery, with a sword still sheathed at his hip. He also carried a slate and chalk. "Peace, Sir Knight. Identify yourself and state your business here in Pevet. We were not expecting any envoy from the knights." The sentry's voice was thin and reedy, and he did not pause once in his greeting, rushing it all out in one long breath. He looked over the group, nodding to himself at each, and made a series of marks on his slate. "I am Sir Brannis Soloran, commander of the 8th Battalion, and this is what remains of my command. We are en route to Cadrus to report and receive new orders. And this is Iridan Corian of the Imperial Circle. He was assigned to accompany my command and lend the Circle's support to our efforts, Brannis replied. Then he added in a lower voice, and we are rather road-weary and seek soft beds for the night before we travel onwards.
Very well, I shall send word ahead to Lord Fenrigar. If you would be so good as to follow the main thoroughfare to the town center and bear left, you will find a warm welcome at the keep. Lord Fenrigar has always been a friend of the knighthood.
A deep breath, and then,
my name is Sneed, and if you require anything, please allow me to assist you.
Brannis wondered if there was some sort of condition that the man suffered from that made him gasp out his speech thus.
Thank you, Brannis said. But we do not require...
Actually, Sneed, Iridan interrupted, if you could be so good as to point my way to the Circle's meeting place here in Pevet, I would much like to confer with my colleagues.
And aside to Brannis, he confided, I would like to confirm that our warning was received and send word ahead of our impending arrival. Pevet has a speaking stone, unless I am mistaken.
Very well, Brannis said. Show my friend the way to the Circle's home in Pevet, and the rest of us will find ourselves accommodations for the night. We are no dignitaries, merely soldiers who must report back to Cadrus with all practical haste. It would be unseemly to be feted by your most gracious Lord Fenrigar when we have such pressing business. Please pass our regards along to his lordship, and should he still require our presence, we will of course oblige.
Brannis had always been a natural at sidestepping social occasions he did not care to become entangled in.
Very well, sir, if you insist.
Sneed seemed nonplussed by their declining Lord Fenrigar's hospitality.
If you head for the dockside, you can find...
We shall manage fine on our own, Rishan said. I am familiar with the town. It was the first Rishan had spoken since they arrived at the gates. He had agreed to let Brannis, uniformed officer and knight of the Cadran Empire, smooth the introductions, but he clearly still viewed himself as the one in charge. He urged his horse forward and passed the rest of the group. Brannis and the others fell in behind, and Iridan split off to go seek out the local sorcerers. Brannis nodded a brief acknowledgement to Sneed as they passed. When they were well out of earshot of Sneed, Rishan spoke,
I have not been here in a long time, but while I suspect it may be under new ownership, the Rockshore Inn and Tavern, or its successor, ought to still be just a short walk from the dockside.
I am curious, Brannis, if he had asked the rest of our names, what would you have told him?
The truth, and count on a general ignorance of history to make it just slip by unnoticed?
Would you have lied? Or better yet, would you have proudly announced you were bringing the great warlock Rishan back home with you?
Rishan chuckled, clearly enjoying pondering what Brannis might have done.
I suppose I could have let Sneed decide. I cannot be held accountable for a man's education, nor for his lack of one. I think you underestimate yourself, though, if you think your name forgotten. Rashan's bargain, remember? Perhaps he would not know the origin of the phrase, but the name would have likely stuck in his ear, possibly enough to bother him into inquiring further, if he did not know the tale already, Brannis said. For whatever reason, the way Rishan asked questions worked its way past any thought of whether he should answer or not. He seemed to take an interest in dissecting his own thought process aloud.
Ah, what an unfortunate association, Rishan said. I know, I have heard the phrase enough times, even before leaving the Empire. You have not seen a face go quite as red so quickly as when someone realizes they have been overheard by the warlock whose name they have just used so disparagingly. Believe what you will about me, and I know my reputation is as bloody as it is well earned, but I have never taken retribution for such casual disrespect. I save my vitriol for my enemies, and I have no enemies among my own people. I am their champion, their defender, their weapon. I am the bloody right hand of the Emperor, loyally cutting down whatever His Highness directs me against. All I have done has been to carry out the Emperor's will, for good or ill.
Brannis noted that Rishan grew increasingly impassioned as he spoke, clearly proud of his service in the Emperor's name. The streets were busy, and among the noise of the crowd, no one was paying them enough attention to bother eavesdropping, though anyone who had would have been fascinated. So all the wars, all the conquests, it was all the Emperor's idea? Brennus asked.
Emperors, plural. Mind you, Brennus, that I was far from young at the Battle of Farron's Plain. I served 4 emperors, each with their own way of keeping the empire. I first took the mantle of warlock during the reign of Escalon IV. He was old and knew his health was failing. He told me that he wanted his empire secured before his son took the throne. He had me drive back the goblins, likely ancestors of the ones you recently encountered, from the northwest of the empire and back up into the Granite Talons mountain range. I took ships and sank the fleets of Gar Danel that had preyed on our merchants. I was preparing to launch a full-scale war against Magren when Escalon died one night in his sleep. Tamaran I was his heir and did not see things as his father did. He had me stop my planned invasion and focus my efforts on building the strength of the empire from within. He wanted me to train others to be warlocks and to teach our sorcerers how to do battle. And I assure you, there is a difference.
Brennus nodded. Under his long rule, Cadrin waged no war of aggression, but twice fought off smaller foes who sought to steal small stretches of land while we seemed passive. I also killed 3 of my own sons trying to make warlocks out of them. Roshan paused for a moment and sighed, seeming to drift away mentally from the conversation for just a moment. It cannot be done so easily, you know. The talent is either there or it is not. It was a hard thing to learn.
After Tamaran was Liad.
Liad the Only, for he forbade his ancestors from reusing his name. He and I were friends. I had educated him as a boy, and he grew up as more like a son to me than to the Emperor. He shared my views and saw the Cadrin Empire for what it could be, and not what it was. It was he who gave me wide latitude to expand the Empire whenever I could. It was under his reign that my Magren invasion took place, whence my appellation was earned, and when we added Turaman, Gelk, and Safshan to the Empire. Lorimar was Gelkin, and his rise was a consequence of our conquest. The 1st and 2nd Necromancer Wars were both fought during Liad's time as an emperor. When Merinon II took the throne, I was well entrenched as his main advisor, having been his father's most trusted friend for over 60 summers. He was a brilliant strategist. I made sure of that. It was his idea to form the Red Riders, Roshan said, sighing yet again, and doom so many of our young sorcerers to a life of battle against the dead. But his idea was what saved us from Lorimar. Well, saved Cadrin anyway. I suppose I would have survived in any event.
So what you are saying is, you would almost have preferred that I revealed you as the great and powerful Roshan, long-lost warlock of the Empire and returning hero, Brennus suggested. Trying to stir the stew a bit before our arrival in Cadrin, letting rumor be your herald?
Roshan slit his eyes at Brennus. The boy was no fool. Roshan had always preferred for his words to have 2 meanings when possible. It was just more efficient. Most who heard him would only listen to the obvious, the blustering of an old war mule of a sorcerer, claiming to be Warlock Roshan. He liked to discover who actually paid attention to why he spoke, and not just the plain meaning of the words. Those who did were the ones who were useful, beyond carrying out orders. They were the thinkers who could act on their own and succeed. The young knight's motives were simple enough to read, so he had no doubt of Brennus's loyalty to the Empire, and being kin made it even simpler. Yes, he would put Brennus to use.
No, merely amusing myself at the possible scene it might have caused.
You are right, though. That man Sneed may well have figured it out, even if he would not have believed it, Roshan said. Besides, we are not going to be sneaking up on anyone. They will know rather quickly when we are to be arriving, and who you are supposedly bringing with you.
The Imperial Circle's home in Pevet was a hexagonal granite tower of modest size, rising to a copper dome 3 stories up. The tower was surrounded by a wrought iron fence of ornate design, artfully distracting from the spikes at its top. The gate stood open, allowing convenient access to the cobbled path to the main door. There was no hitching post out front, so Iridan tied his horse's reins to the fence.
Iridan took the path at a slow walk, taking in the carefully manicured grass and small flowers that made up the courtyard that surrounded the tower. Though admittedly he had not seen the Lord's Keep on the other side of town, it was the only landscaped part of Pevitt he had seen. Stone benches and tables were interspersed across the grounds, but were unoccupied. The hour was growing late, and if anyone had partaken of the pleasant autumn weather, they had already sought shelter from the chill that dusk was already beginning to bring. The door at the end of the path stood atop three wide stone steps, and was a massive thing of carved panels, stained a deep reddish black with brass adornments at the edges where time and use might have otherwise worn it. Iridan imagined that it was probably oak, but he was no good with trees and what their wood looked like. There was no guard posted outside, since no one with any sense would trespass on the Imperial Circle's land. Carved in the stone above the door was the motto, "Herein lies power," written in the syllables of arcane text. He took hold of the ogre-headed knocker and rapped thrice on the door. Thuck, thuck, thuck. A moment passed and Iridan waited before the door finally opened, revealing a middle-aged servant dressed in a tiny brown tunic and trousers, bearing a small emblem denoting service to the circle, a small lightning bolt within a flame, stitched in yellow thread, meant to look gold at a casual glance. The servant's hair was gray and only ringed the periphery of his head. He wore a tiny pair of spectacles and appeared rather scholarly.
"Greetings, young man. What business brings you here?" the servant asked.
He glanced up and down at Iridan, which reminded Iridan that he was dressed most intentionally not to look like a sorcerer, given the hazards of his recent assignment. "My name is Iridan Corian, Fourth Circle. I'm returning from an assignment with an army regiment scouting beyond the Cloudwall Mountains in Kelvy Forest. This is the first town we have come to that has a speaking stone, and I would be obliged if I could make use of it." Iridan knew his rank of Fourth Circle was enough to at least garner a modicum of respect from someone who would realize that it was rather an advanced position for someone of his apparent age, though with sorcerers, trying to determine age by sight could be misleading. "Oh, and I might ask if I could trouble your hospitality for a change of uniform. I was deployed to be inconspicuous among the soldiers I accompanied."
"Well, enter then, Iridan Corian. I will announce you to the master of Pevitt Tower, Heridiar Stellaris of the Second Circle. You may make your requests of him. In the meantime, avail yourself of a late repast in the dining hall."
The servant clapped his hands, and a younger man, no larger than Iridan, came from around a corner so quickly he must have been awaiting his summons.
"Jaffard," the servant said, "take our guest to the dining hall and see if the cook has kept something warm for him to sup on."
With that, the servant bowed quickly and turned to depart, leaving Iridan to Jaffard's care. The young man led Iridan to a small but elegant room with a polished wood table, lit by magic, as would be the case all throughout the tower, he knew. Sorcerers left few opportunities unexploited when it came to using their magics to make their homes more comfortable. Lighting that would react to a mere gesture or word was too dear a luxury for many to consider lighting with candles. The boy mumbled a few pleasantries and trundled off to presumably get him some dinner. Iridan had not come with the thought of a free meal in mind, but found he was hungry enough not to argue, and expected that the sorcerers of Pevitt were unlikely to deny themselves a fine kitchen staff. Iridan's conjecture bore out, and he was halfway through a fine venison stew when the master of the tower arrived. The man was taller than Iridan by a head, and built like a merchant. That is to say, he was rotund and looked unfamiliar with the concepts of fresh air and manual labor.
"So, back from the borderlands, I hear."
Heridiar stalked across the room to clasp hands with Iridan as the latter quickly set down his spoon and stood to meet his superior.
"Good lad. Way to make a name for yourself. Hold one over the heads of all those pompous fools who think they will learn all about magic, sniffing at the same ether from dawn till dusk. Heridiar Stellaris, master of Pevitt Tower."
"Iridan Corian, Fourth Circle, sir. Thank you for your hospitality," Iridan responded. He was about to continue, but Haridiar was quicker.
So my man Delph says you a favor to ask. Want to use our speaking stone, is that so?
He asked. Well, we had sent a report back via an inspelled bird, you see, but we have no means of ensuring our message was received and understood. I would be much reassured if I was to know our warning had been heeded.
Warning, you say? What sort of warning? Things not all flowers and tea cakes in the borderlands?
Heridiar's already considerable interest in Iridan seemed to suddenly grow. No, sir, not at all. I accompanied 100 men, 10 of them knights, into Kelvi Forest. Two other commands of similar size went along as well, and spread out to investigate reports of goblin activity. 15 remain now, including myself, and of the other two commands, we believe all are lost save two we rescued in the wood, and they are included among the 15. We also picked up a traveler, a woodland hermit who gave us shelter and aided in healing a bad case of ether burn I suffered in battle. We head on to Cadrus come morning, and I had hoped to convey all this to someone in the inner circle before we depart.
Well, that's quite disturbing.
Heridiar's face grew pale.
Nearly 300 lost. I presume the other groups had a sorcerer assigned them as well? Do you know their names? The ones the circle may have lost?
One was Kelurian Donarte, 5th Circle, I believe. The other was Randall of Sarkin, 4th Circle. I do not believe any others were assigned to the expedition. We have no physical evidence of their demise, but we strongly suspect it. Iridan was glad that Heridiar was more concerned about his fellow sorcerers than about finding out details about their newest acquaintance. He was not sure how to truthfully give the tale without making himself out to be a fool or half-crazed. Had he thought Roshan was lying, he could give a faithful account without casting his own credibility into doubt, but he was fairly convinced that Roshan was who he claimed to be. Let Brannis be the skeptic. Iridan wanted to believe.
Terrible tragedy, terrible tragedy.
The master of Pevitt Tower shook his head sadly.
By all means, take your leisure with the speaking stone. I shall leave orders that you are not to be disturbed. Until you are given leave by the inner circle, I will ask no further details of you. You've sated my curiosity enough that I can in good conscience allow you access to our stone. I shall press for no details that you may not be at liberty to divulge.
Heridiar gave Iridan a wink.
Come right this way. Follow me.
And with that, he headed for the stairs. Iridan followed close behind. Down they went, 2 levels underground, the stone walls smooth and well cared for at either side of them as they descended. A fine rug hugged the middle of each stairway, thick reddish-purple fabric deadening their footfalls and reducing the echo of the stone stairwell. The sorcerers in Pevitt clearly took excellent care of their home. Heridiar stopped next to a door marked Room of Words in arcane text.
Geknu Feral Binah, he intoned,
and then made a series of twisting motions with his fingers and wrists. Iridan watched in the ether as the wards protecting the door unraveled. It was a common enough spell, but to unlock a particular ward required either knowing the correct gestures to pull it apart, or long hours of guesswork figuring them out. Iridan was not sure he had seen what Heridiar had done well enough to copy it, should he have the need.
Do not worry, I shall leave it unwarded behind you. My sorcerers and servants alike are trustworthy and will leave you in peace.
With that, Heridiar left Iridan to enter the Room of Words. The room itself was sparse. A stone table stood in the center of the octagonal room, an O-shaped rug encircling it. 4 comfortable-looking high-backed chairs surrounded the table, with padded seats, backs, and arms. Set into the surface of the table was a geodesic sphere of glass. While the glass itself was ordinary, though excellent craftsmanship, it was enchanted to communicate across vast distances with others like it. Iridan would be trying to contact Cadrus, where the Imperial Circle had their own speaking stone. He had no idea who might be attending to one at such an hour, but someone would be. He walked over to one of the chairs and sat down. He took a deep breath to calm his thoughts and reached out with both hands, laying them on the stone.
Whoom!
The stone pulsed with ether, causing a moment of dizziness to Iridan as he accustomed himself to the link. Tendrils drifted far off into the vastness of the ether, and as Iridan envisioned Cadrus and the tower of the palace at the inner circle called home, the tendrils veered off in the direction of the Empire's capital. Iridan lost some sense of perspective as he could simultaneously perceive his backside cushioned on the seat of a chair in Pevitt, while his mind felt like it was suspended in the ether, halfway to Cadrus. After what seemed to be just a moment or two, he heard a voice echo in the ether.
"Who is this?"
The brusque voice came clearly enough, though the echo would make it hard to identify someone by voice. It was clearly male, though.
"That had best not be you again, Heridiar. I shall make my move when I make it. I will not let you harangue me into making a mistake."
No, this is Iridan Corian, Fourth Circle. To whom am I speaking, if I might ask? Iridan spoke aloud, knowing that his voice was carrying across the ether as well.
"I am Caladhras Solaran, boy. You were sent to Kelvi Forest with my nephew," the voice responded.
Caladhras had no need to identify himself by circle. He was Inner Circle. All sorcerers in the Empire knew who the 12 members of the Inner Circle were. It would have been almost pompous of Caladhras to dangle his rank about when he knew Iridan was well aware of it, which is why it surprised Iridan slightly that he had not done so. Brannis's kin were not known for their humility.
"Why are you using the Pevitt Tower speaking stone?" Caladhras asked. "Have you news? We received a messenger bird, but it told little."
"Well, that relieves me greatly. The first thing I had wanted to do was confirm that the circle had received our warning. We were nearly wiped out. Goblins overran our camp. We believe they followed the survivors of Sir Farron Jesser's command. His was wiped out as well, and there were but two survivors, sentries who had been cut off from the fighting. Of Sir Denever Taldine's force, we had heard nothing and suspect the worst." Iridan was sweating. It was not so much the exertion of the speaking stone link, that was rather undemanding, but rather the fact that he was having this conversation with Caladhras Solaran of the Inner Circle. And eventually he would have to mention the one member of their entourage that was going to be uncomfortable to explain.
"Tragic. Kelurian and Randall were their sorcerers, at least for the expedition. I suppose neither of them survived."
There was a long sigh from Caladhras, who seemed genuinely mournful.
"How did you manage to escape their fate? Was it by trick or fortune that you survived when so many others did not?"
"We were victorious after a fashion. We had deduced, after one of the fugitive sentries arrived, that he would have been followed, if not directly, then at least tracked to us. Sir Brannis had us dig in and ambush them as best we could. The losses on both sides were staggering, but I do not think more than a handful of their assault force survived to flee," Iridan said. He felt a small swell of pride for the first time since the battle, considering how his actions had helped ensure their survival. He had not really given much thought to how the other two Cadran forces had been destroyed utterly, and how they had actually prevailed, albeit at a terrible price.
"And what did you do in this great battle? You were sent in support of Sir Brannis's command. But if it was as wiggly a spot as you describe, I suppose you must have intervened. How did you represent yourself? Did you give a good and professional accounting? A credit to the circle? We will have reports from the others, and your stories will be checked against one another."
Caladhras trailed off ominously. Iridan swallowed, not entirely sure he was not going to be called to task very shortly. "I prepared the battlefield ahead of time. I had tamed wolves to patrol our perimeter, and they were the first to give warning of the assault. I gathered fog to obscure the vision, though only high enough to hinder the goblins. It was also to conceal pit traps that Sir Brannis had instructed his men to dig. When the battle joined in earnest, I used shielding spells to ward off attacks of the goblins' fire hurlers. When they gained an advantage on us, I used telekinesis to hurl debris from the campsite into their midst, killing several.
So you're blood drunk now, are you? Got a taste of killing? Caladrus asked. Have a care, boy. I know the thrill of battle can be exhilarating, but it is a path that leads to self-destruction.
I was nearly overmatched by a sudden blast, Iridan interrupted, surprising even himself. But he could not let himself be lectured about self-destruction after what he had recently been through. But was able to catch it in time by instinct, bringing up a barrier. I was too hasty, though, and blacked out. I suffered a near-fatal case of ether burn. I know no further details of the battle as I was carried senseless from the field by the soldiers.
A hard way to learn a lesson, but one you shall not forget.
The voice had softened some, as if it had heard what it needed to hear from its interrogation, and became sympathetic.
So, Iridan Corian, you have indeed survived. One moment.
There was a pause where Iridan felt contact with the Cadran speaking stone break off.
All right now. Name for me the others who survived and are returning to Cadran with you. I shall be making a report, and I expect others will be wanting to know about their loved ones.
Well, apart from myself or Sir Brannis, who seemed to have suffered no lasting harm in the battle, Sir Lugrin, who I believe injured his sword arm in the battle, and who has seemed unusually subdued ever since. I dare say I cannot recall more than a few words he has spoken since I recovered. Among the conscripts were Meron, Jorafir, Bregor.
Do you know their family names? Caladrus interjected.
Iridan froze. He was not a part of the regiment officially. He was merely attached temporarily for this endeavor. He had never seen the men's names, nor sought to learn them.
No, I cannot say that I do. I feel dreadful now that you mention it, but I never had a reason to learn them.
Iridan was not sure how well his heartfelt contrition sounded across the ether link. Could you possibly consult someone from the army who might have a roster of names?
I suppose. Carry on.
Iridan breathed an audible sigh of relief, then immediately froze up. Had Caladrus heard that?
Yes, well, there's also Tulok, Fardro, Leopan, Dinair, Kundragar, Huayn, and Urnar.
Iridan mentally ticked off the names in his head as he visualized the faces of the men he had been traveling with the past fortnight, proud that he had remembered Kun's full name.
Then there are the two survivors from Sir Farron's force, Jodul Brecht and Todd Hellet. We questioned them upon their arrival, so I had cause to learn their surnames.
Very well. The hour is late, and I would much like to retire for the evening. We shall be expecting you in, say, 4 days' time? You shall be expected at the tower.
Caladrus referred, of course, to the Tower of Contemplation, the northernmost tower of the Imperial Palace, and the seat of the Imperial Circle's power. Iridan took a deep, steadying breath.
There is one other with us. We found him living in Kelvi Forest. He was knowledgeable in treating ether burn, and so they let him help nurse me back to health where I might otherwise have died. He says he lived in the Empire, was even born there, but had not been back in some time. Our encounter seemed to have given him either an excuse or at least a motivation to return to the Empire.
Fine, what's his name? I shall write it down, but then I am off for a warm spiced wine and an even warmer bed. You lose track of time using this dratted thing, and I have come to understand that it is well past midnight. One of the attendants just alerted me.
He gave his name as Rashan.
Iridan paused to listen briefly, but heard nothing but cold, eerie silence from the connection. And gave his family name as Solaran.
Preposterous! You found a madman or someone who has taken on a most unfortunate pseudonym. Have you noticed any odd behaviors about him? Does he talk to himself or have a look in his eye of one whose wits do not quite all line up in a row? Is he dangerous?
Caladrus's voice sounded nervous and worried.
Keep a close watch on him. I know you say he helped heal you, and you should be grateful to him for that. But have a care who you take into your trust.
He's obviously unstable in some way. Bring him to Cadrus if you feel you must, either out of gratitude or prudence. If you feel some remuneration has been deserved for his assistance, by all means we can accommodate. But do not leave him unguarded among you. I will not lose a third sorcerer in this endeavor to something like carelessness in the handling of a madman. Iridan let Caladrius ramble as he thought how to put his next words into an order that indicted neither himself nor Roshan as crazed. It was going to be tough to convince Caladrius when he still had doubts himself, but too many coincidences had piled up. Too many details fit too cleanly into place. Iridan believed in conspiracy, in elaborate plans and deals forged in dark hallways and hidden rooms. He knew that Cadrin and its enemies all engaged in subterfuge and espionage, a game of goblins and ogres to see if a small amount of force could be used to topple a large foe. But for the life of him, he could not conceive of why anyone would want to impersonate a long-dead warlock. If Roshan's claim was false, and he was a charlatan, he would be found out and destroyed the first time anyone tested his powers. If his claim was false, yet he was truly powerful, why adopt a guise so implausible as to not help but arouse suspicion? Far easier to insinuate his way into the imperial circles through less conspicuous means, unless there was a far deeper game afoot than Iridan could imagine, which he was willing to accept was a possibility, then the remaining choice was to believe. I have seen no odd mannerisms. In fact, he seems to be the most rational and thoughtful man I have met. His wits are quite intact, I can assure you, for I have seen him work magic, and he's done so as a warlock might. No verbal or gestural aids in his magic. I realize, of course, that plenty of sorcerers can perform the same feat any time they wish, if they are undisturbed. But he's also dangerous. I will not dispute that one. I had left out the detail of the ambush at Tidbrick. The garrison had been overtaken by Rebel Magrin. Almost by reflex, he leaped the fortress wall and slaughtered every man within. He claims he's a demon. He claims he survived the Battle of the Dead Earth and gave an accounting of how it was won. He says that he was wounded by the necromancer's putrid ether, tainting his source, and that he kept away to prevent himself from bringing that taint home with him. Iridan took a quick breath, then, "And I believe him." "I must know more." Neither Iridan nor Caladrius Solaran of the Inner Circle slept much at all that night.